Welcome to the Digital Analytics Power Hour. Three analytics pros and the occasional guest discussing digital analytics issues of the day. Find them on Facebook at facebook.com/analytics hour. And now, the Digital Analytics Power Hour.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Analytics Power Hour. The Digital Analytics Power Hour. Don't be confused with other power hours out there. This is episode 20. Well, Tim Wilson, you are my co-host, and I welcome you to the show.
It's good to be here.
Wait for it. Jim Kane, could you wait for it? Jim Kane, you are also my co-host, and I welcome you to the show as well.
There it is. I feel welcome.
Don't worry. I feel like from this intro that it's like 2 a.m. in the morning and we've actually been drinking for 4 hours straight.
Hey, we want to reenact that lobby bar. We don't say when we're going to reenact that lobby bar. So tonight we assemble my fine worthies of analytics to discuss creativity. Can data curtail culture and creativity? Is it a corporate conundrum? So throughout our analytics careers, you sometimes will hear things like people say, hey, listen, keep your analytics data away from my creative process. You'll cramp my style. Or recently, there was a big hullabaloo about a New York Times article about Amazon and specifically how Amazon's using data to try to extract as much work as possible from their people, thus creating a negative corporate culture because of data. And so tonight or today, whatever time it is, it's an undetermined time period, we're going to talk about that. Let's talk about it. Let's discuss it. Let's rip it apart. Let's crack it open and see about creativity and analytical data. Do you have to sign away your creative concepts at the crack of the data whip? All right, I'll stop trying to be alliterative. Hand it over to you guys. What do you think? What's the relationship between being data driven and creative?
Well, you guys know how I came to this stuff in the first place, right? My background is mostly in sales, and in sales, people tend to use numbers and data to get creative, right? So, are you going to hit your quota? Absolutely, I got numbers to prove it. Blah 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 blah. And on the other side, you know, with some of the work that we do now at Napkin, we're in a position where we can help people make more informed decisions with data and help them be more creative by uncovering things that you wouldn't have seen that allow you to get it right on the first pass. And I think that those are like the pros and cons to it. So, you know, I've gone into a number of organizations as a new analyst where they say, we're a data-driven culture, and we come in and they're doing 4 times daily KPI reports that are, you know, 6 pages deep. No one actually reads them. It's death by data, analysis paralysis. And that stifles innovation because everybody knows, you know, I got to make sure nothing goes red on this page, and they don't do a good job. On the other hand, when you actually have a business that's competing on analytics, you can actually, I think you could be a lot more creative when you think about measurement than when you don't. The example that we always use at the office is House, the TV show House. You know, they sit down and they take everything they know and they find things out and they go through the whiteboard and the patient almost dies. Pretty standard day at Napkin.
Wow, that's a nice analogy. I almost feel like if we on this episode can come up with a handful of sound bites that the analysts who are in companies who get told that, like, I don't want to look at the data. I don't know that analysts get told explicitly, I don't want to look at the data, but I definitely know I have heard, I'm concerned that the data is going to, we're a brand driven company and the data is just going to drive us to our homepage is going to look like Google. And I think that's complete bullshit, because to me, the creatives are sometimes some of the best partners for analysts because they're super creative, but they actually want to know if their creative ideas work or not. They have more ideas than they can possibly run with, and they'd love to say, I wonder if we could do X, or I wonder if Y is happening, and they actually would love to have the data kind of reinforced so they can actually get in a virtuous cycle, which I think is sort of where Jim was heading as well, that there can be a virtuous cycle between creative, independent thought, ideation, and the hard numbers that are testing that. Yes, this idea seemed good, but it didn't hold up. This idea seemed kind of weak, but it turned out it really worked. What I see happen more often is that once data gets brought in and we're getting a daily report that's 20 pages long, is, oh, now we don't have to think. Now we don't have to have, we're not supposed to have creativity. So it's this horrible thing that is starting to permeate business, that the data is giving us the answers, and so we're not even going to ask the question. And that bothers me enormously, you know, when somebody comes to me and says, we should do user experience testing on our site. And I say, that's great, but that's not going to give you much if you don't know what you really want your site to do. And then they say, well, what does the data say that my site should do? And I kind of want to put my head through a wall, because the data shouldn't be telling you what your site should do. The data should be helping you, you know, vet out the ideas.
Yeah, creative effort, just like data, doesn't exist in a vacuum. And that's sometimes when I've heard people say that, it's like, don't get in the way of the creative process. Like, let people be creative. But it's not just being creative in a vacuum, right? There's a reason to be creative, right? To put stuff on your website.
Well, I worked with a guy who was he's a kind of a senior agency designer. And he actually said data helps give you creative clarity, because he was kind of ranting as a creative. He said, I hate it when some account manager or some executive comes to me and says, you're going to love this project because we just want you to do something awesome. We're going to put no guardrails on it. Just do something cool. And he's like, they think they're giving me a gift. And the fact is, what I want to know is, what is the outcome we're trying to achieve? That gives me, you know, some guardrails. It gives me the destination I'm going to. Now I can actually be more creative because I actually know where I'm trying to go. So he and I had a lot of fun when it came to, you know, the importance of figuring out what your KPIs were. And even in that, this was in an agency environment, and there were people saying, oh, the creatives aren't going to like working with you because you're going to be constraining them. And I kept pointing to this guy, Todd Usula. Because I'm like, no, he absolutely said, I would love to have clarity around what I'm trying to achieve. And then I can go balls to the wall when it comes to being creative.
Have you guys done eMetrics Toronto before?
Yes, I have. Yeah, yeah.
So the guy who was one of the original organizers, I think, of DAA Toronto is a guy named Patrick Glinsky. And I don't think he's an active... I had pints with him a couple months ago. Very smart dude. But he did a session like 4 years ago or something on how to use measurement in a user experience development project. And it was a really, really neat session. To me, to go back to the original question, you know, are we holding back creativity? Unless I beg someone to let us play, we never get involved in a new site design project. It is purely designers and technologists. There's never any data kids in the room. So if we were in a scenario where people were so concerned about the numbers that it was allowing people to not be creative, you would think that agencies or internal build teams would invite the measurement team to the building of $1 million website. I mean, call me nuts.
Wait, so you're saying that
never gets used for new design.
But is that because there's a fear that it will stifle creativity?
I think it's because people don't even think to try. That's what I'm saying. Like, is this article kind of crying wolf? Have we gone to the point where people are actually saying, well, we shouldn't even try and launch a new website because, you know, it could change these numbers? I don't see it.
Well, I mean, I think there's a school of thought that says you should stop redesigning your website. You should just take an incremental approach and just continue to refine, because, you know, it's a website. It's a website, and you can iterate your way to a functional site. I think I've more run into qualitative, hey, we're doing a site redesign. We've done some focus groups. We've done some usability testing. Why on earth would we want to look at the web analytics data? And I don't know that I hear that as a, maybe it's along the same lines of where you're going. It just doesn't occur to them. It's not a, oh, this will stifle creativity so much as it just doesn't quite fit in. But that seems like kind of a separate challenge of figuring out where the data can add value.
Yeah, and it's usually because that website data probably isn't tied into other aspects of how they're understanding or approaching that design. If it were, then it'd be a pretty pivotal piece to how they were doing that, I would say.
Well, except I think focus groups and maybe usability testing winds up just naturally, organizationally, just tends to be a little more tightly aligned with the creative and UX teams, and analytics may sit a
sure.
little more distant, right?
Well, I mean, yeah, it all depends on the organization. I think the other thing that we're not saying so far is that, you know, data can also be used as its own weapon to really break some stuff and hurt people. You know, so we've been there where, you know, people seize data as a political tool to get their way, you know, and even hoard data and hoard analysts so that nobody else can really get in there and see what's going on. So that's another flip side of that, right? That's where I think data or being analytical can sometimes be a problem, not a good thing.
So I think that's what I was trying to get to before. So, you know, again, when we look at the topic, we have the word data and culture and creativity in there. And I don't think it's data's fault. I think it's companies with toxic cultures getting a hold of something else to do weaponized reporting or making people do what I want or hiding behind bullshit that I shouldn't have done 2 weeks ago.
I feel like this is the point where we should admit that the whole title was from an exhaustive analysis of past podcast performance, that we actually had machine learning and AI generate the optimal podcast topic.
That's right.
And I think what we're
going to demonstrate is there is no creativity in this podcast.
We have not yet achieved the singularity because it's going to be total shit. But, you know, that's, you know, sometimes the data lets you down.
Jim makes a good point. Tim, I don't know what you're talking about. Machine learning. Yeah, no one's going to believe that we have machine learning given last episode with Eric Skynet. And all of us. No, but I think you make a good point. Data itself is not the problem. It's the use or the way the agendas of the people using the data or the culture around the data. That's why, as an analyst, I always try to be neutral. If you own the data, you've got to be Switzerland or whatever is a good current example of neutrality. Maybe that's not a good current example, just given, you know, what we've learned about them from bankers and chocolate and what have you.
Conspiracy All theory right. edition.
That's right.
Well, but there was that reminds me of that the New York Times article, and we always say we'll post stuff on our show page, and we don't really have a show page, and we forget to post links. But this was a New York Times article from back in August, so like a month and a half ago, and one of the notes in it was how you've got these, I can't remember if it was quarterly, these reviews, and you'll have like 50 or 60 pages of data, and the people will get grilled on them, and if they don't have the data memorized. And I was reading that saying, who the hell can memorize 50 to 60 pages of data? And where would that possibly make sense that the rote exercise is saying, I know the data because I've managed to memorize it?
Yeah, like a lot of things in that article, I don't think most of it rang true, and that was one of them. I would love that process. Nothing's better than getting a hold of a data set you understand and looking for all the outliers in it and figuring out why things happened.
Well, but I would not want to be able to recall if somebody else is sitting with 50 or 60 pages to ask me about minutia. I would want to be plotting and visualizing and digging in and asking questions. And I'd want to come up with 30 questions that I wanted to ask of the data that were 30 questions that I might be able to do something with, and 27 of them. And they're all creative questions. Creative, not necessarily creative design, but creative of, what if we did this crazy, wacky thing? And 27 of them wouldn't pan out. And I'd love to go in and say, hey, I had 30 different ideas that were creative, independent thought. Some of them were way out there, some were incremental, and I used that 50, 60 pages of data, and I tested every one of them the best I could. And most of them were duds, and it said these were the three that are my diamonds. But that's not how the article represented it.
Well, and I don't think a lot of people are in the position that we're in where you can do that and not get kicked out of the boardroom. When you were talking, I was thinking of the episode that we did a while ago when it was know when to hold them, know when to fold them, whatever we called it. When is it time to quit? That one?
Yep.
We should have called it know when to hold them, know when to fold them. That would have been great.
Damn it. I think we can update that.
Damn it. Update that. But to me, a scenario, if you go into an organization and people say that it's a data-driven culture, because I've seen this a bunch before. We are a data-driven culture. And then you walk in and people are saying, so you're going to write me a report that proves that email kicked ass last week, right?
Yeah, or I agree. That's like the terrible get out. Like a kiss of death.
Get out.
So in essence, what we're saying is if anyone says they're a data-driven culture, run away.
I mean, a large retailer where it is emblazoned in my brain how the business got closed and the account team came back and said, you're going to love working with these guys. They are all about the data. They are totally data driven. They have binders of data. They showed us binders of data. The problem is they just don't know what to do with it. And so we told them, you can tell them what to do with it. And I'm like, one, you have fucking binders of data. Why are you printing this stuff out?
Binders full of stuff really works out well.
We had a catalog customer years ago, and they're coming on board. We're big on data-driven culture. And again, it's honestly, that phrase really is like a, oh shit, here we go, kind of phrase when you hear that. But they realized that the old IBM servers, like remember the old monitors that could only be yellow, blue, and red? The computer that would work with their database was so old that they had to pull up the report for my analyst, take a picture of it with a cell phone, email them the picture. So it's like, okay, I guess you're data driven.
They could be. I mean, honestly, I'm trying to think of the companies that are, and I'm drawing a blank now on specific examples of ones that literally have honed in and saying nothing matters but these two things. And well, maybe, you know, Nordstrom's. Take Nordstrom as your example. Amazon sort of claimed it's all about the customer. Nordstrom's has had the good and the bad written about them. But I don't necessarily think you have to have reams of data and be crunching the data all the time. There's a level of saying, are we really clear on what success is? And do we have that? That's, to me, a good chunk of being data driven. We know what we've defined what success looks like. And, you know, if that's someone walking around with a clipboard counting something and then once a week saying, here's how we're doing, that's data driven. And that's if people are coming up with ideas to try out and they're saying, we're going to try this one thing this week and see if it moves the needle on that one set of widgets that we're counting. That's legitimately being data driven. I think the opposite is what happens is we've got millions of rows and thousands of columns of data, and no one's actually defined what success looks like, which is going to head us down the, okay, success looks like profit, you know, fine. But in large organizations, there's a gap between, in that way, 1,000 people have to do a million different things. And at the end of the year, you say, hey, you know, might as well be a coin flip. We did better or worse. So I don't know necessarily the volume of data viewed defines whether or not you're actually being legitimately data driven or not.
I'm going to go back to the culture again. You know, some companies need a real hard shake, and data is one of the places where they just aren't able to compete. If you think about it, I mean, our discipline is what? As like a mature-ish discipline, 10, 15 years tops. Big digital is maybe 15, 20 to 25, you know what I mean? Like the companies, a lot of the ones that we work with are like 100 years old. Organizations with thousands of employees cannot move at the speed of internet. And you know, some of the stuff that we do that we think is obvious is a cultural mindfuck for some of the companies that we work with.
Except you look, a lot of those large companies, they basically, so e-commerce, you know, e-commerce, it's still weird to me sometimes that e-commerce winds up in its own silo. but it seems like retailers especially, every single one of them said, okay, that guy can go start up that one computer and start selling a few t-shirts, you know, online. And they, and e-commerce winds up kind of divorced from the rest of the business until all of a sudden e-commerce is a hefty part of the overall P&L. And they're like, oh crap, we need to start focusing on this. And so then they have to pivot. But even outside of retail, it seems like there are more and more companies that have a digital division or a digital department, and they're starting to say, this area really, really matters. That starts to get into the world of channel silos and omni-channel and multi-channel. But I think there are times where that digital winds up carrying this big lodestone of, you're digital, you have crap tons more data than we do, so therefore you are data-driven. And they just get kind of labeled as being data-driven because they can produce gobs and gobs of reports whether or not they're really being data-driven or not.
You know, I think even that's advanced. And I'm not hating on big companies. It's just, you know, adoption of things that kind of revolutionize how you run your business are hard. And we've worked with some companies in the past where people in the C-suite don't even like each other, let alone have conversations about alignment on verbs. You know, I think a lead means something than you do, because we don't like each other, we'll never figure that out, right? I mean, those are things where...
That's definitely a culture problem.
Right? But then you end up in a situation where both of those people show up at a board meeting and they both have reports on leads that don't line up. And they probably have people who crunch data for each of them.
Does that happen at the board level, or do they not get alignment before? I mean, I definitely have seen the pissing matches between my data versus your data, my system versus your system. Showing up at a board meeting with conflicting data just seems like you're just everybody's under the bus.
But that's why web analytics data, digital analytics data always gets treated, we don't, but in most organizations, they call it directional data. Because what happens is, that's bullshit. It doesn't have to be. It totally doesn't have to be.
Oh yeah. Let's get a finance guy on here, and he's going to rip you a new one. Because you can't.
Bring it.
You can't ever make digital analytics data map one-to-one with transactional back-end system data.
No, but sub 5% deviation. Like, you can make, especially for a large organization, extremely accurate business improvement decisions.
Maybe 7%.
I think you can make, but that's, you can definitely make decisions. I mean, there's nothing wrong with directional, right? I remember going rounds and rounds with web trends saying, we got trends, it's in our name. Like, in a sense, I'll give it to them. That's certainly like a visionary thing, because web analytics data is kind of messy and crappy, and people want it to be precise. The whole precision versus accuracy thing. Yes, you have a hard number down to the penny in Google Analytics or Adobe Analytics, and that number is 5 or 10% off from what your system of record is. And guess what? You want to stifle creativity? Chase closing that gap. Chase it for like a day, recognize you can account for half of it, and then walk away and say, you know what? Because it's directional data.
So I think we have our next topic. I mean, I don't want to totally derail this one, but I think that
this has been so laser focused. We definitely don't want to derail it. Yeah, we've taken like 17 ranch spurs already.
Order, okay, order. Fine. There will be order.
But, you know, I've seen reports before where the web analytics numbers are 20, 30 points off what they should be. People didn't try and normalize them. People didn't try to see if they could make them as accurate as possible. And then, but marketing uses that for the reporting, and everybody goes, oh, it's just marketing math. I mean, those are just their reports. That's unacceptable. I'm not saying we need
every
penny for
channel
penny.
claims, you know, full credit for every sale. Then, you know, it's, you add up all the channels and suddenly we've made like 5x the revenue that we actually made. So yeah, that kind of stuff is just silly. But that's the thing, is when culture fights good data usage and curation and all those things, the question we should focus on going forward is, I think we agree it doesn't stifle creativity. What can someone do in an organization when data is being used in this way?
I think that you made a good point, Michael, when you were like, let's just put a fork in the title. Data is not stifling creativity. So let's talk about the other noun in there. Like, culture can stifle creativity by using data as a weapon. Is that kind of where we're – I think that's where we're all at, right?
We've brought up Jim Collins in the past and, you know, Built to Last, he makes the case that you can't change culture and makes a pretty strong argument that, you know, a company's culture is what it is. And again, going back to as Jim was saying, when's it time to leave? And feeling like I have been pushing the boulder up the mountain a few times on the culture front, I wonder if the companies that are ultimately going to be successful long term are ones that have a culture that is conducive to data being used appropriately. It's hard to say Amazon is not it. So if we point back to that 6-week-old article, there's some things in there that do sort of make sense, and there's a ton of creativity baked into that article. Maybe you're doing some things right, maybe doing things wrong, but it's hard to think that they're completely abusing the use of data and using data to beat each other up in a non-productive way.
But if you look at that article, it's not really about data. It's about when you look at a development organization that isn't running sprints properly and they're just trying to jack the developers as hard as possible to get as much work as possible. I read that article and I really saw someone went, you know, if we use the data in the business to make the business people run the equivalent of sprints, we can grind as much work out of them as possible. It had nothing to do with data. It had to do with a strong arm management tactic. To me, that's what I saw.
I read that, and I definitely, Amazon's a company I look up to. Amazon's also a company is the politically where I lean that I cringe the fact that I'm an Amazon Prime member and some of their tactics. And I read that and thought, wow, I would literally be in their interview process and it would be a race to figure out whether they figured out faster or whether I figured out faster that I would not be a fit for that. For that organization, but they're being
well, and
successful.
There's been a lot of other articles written since that one came out that kind of debunk some of the things in that. So I think there's some balancing that needs to be done in terms of that article versus some of the other ones. I mean, Jeff Bezos came out the day after that and basically said, "Wow, yeah, if our company's like that, I would quit. This is terrible." You know, so it's. So, Tim, you made a comment that once the culture goes, there's really nothing. So does that mean nothing you can do about it? Does that mean people should just leave once they see like, whoa, this culture is messed up? Should they just get the heck out of Dodge?
Well, the point Collins makes is that there's not a good culture and a bad culture, that even if Amazon was exactly as it was described in the Times article, that the trick is for Amazon to find enough people who thrive in that, because they've clearly got people, or based on the article, there were people who have been there a long period of time and who love it, and they love the fact that they're being challenged and it's pushing them. So it's not so much that a culture changes. What he says is that a culture, it may slowly and organically evolve over time, but anytime somebody stands up and says, we're going to change the culture, and especially if that is like the mandate for the senior management team to say change the culture, that's the red flag that Collins would say is get out. Like, look at what the culture is today. Do you like what the culture is today? And it's binary. If the answer is yes, stay. If the answer is no, no matter what somebody's saying about changing the culture, it's a total load of crap. So the culture is moving in maybe not glacial, but in long, you know, cultures evolving, moving perceptibly every decade or so. You know, they are what they are. And you take something like digital and data plopping out, it's not going to change the culture. It's whether or not the culture says, well, based on what our culture is, here's what that means for us and here's how we're going to use it. And it seems like there are times where that clashes. And it's going to be really, really frustrating for analysts who are really wanting to use data effectively. And there are times where it's like, oh, no, the fact is the way the company's operated, this just kind of folds right into it. And then you've got companies that are only 3 years old or 5 years old, or, I mean, even Amazon's 94, right? So Amazon's 20 years old and has kind of been, was sort of founded on a, both an operating model and a data component. So I think Amazon is using data effectively. They're the ones that people point to from a personalization perspective. So they've operationalized the data. It's hard to think that wouldn't be exciting and energizing from that perspective. It is baked into the culture.
I would answer that one twofold, depending on the type of listener that we have. So if you're someone who's earlier in your career and you're the analyst, but you're kind of lower on the org chart, you're reporting into people who are reporting into people, and you're in a culture where data is weaponized, it's stifling, I think you gotta pull a chute and get out. I think if you're in a more senior role, you know, you're the director of digital measurement, you're in a situation where you can actually start to affect change. And I'm not saying cultural change, I'm saying the assets tied to measurement, which maybe help lead to change, but whatever, then you can actually do a few things. And the first one that you can do is go out and start murdering every single standardized report that is of low value.
I was wondering where that was going. Who are we going to murder?
You can murder every display agency. Any report that is standardized that you know no one looks at, that has five pages of numbers, all it does is make the analytics team look like nerds that add no value. Go out and just turn them all off. The second thing that you can do is data accuracy and data alignment. And we do a lot of work right now where we try and find what we call secret decoder rings, or one number that exists in the digital analytics system and also exists in another tool of record. I mean, it could be the order number. It could be user ID now with Google Analytics. But starting to create environments where people can rapidly ask questions in different departments and have a high degree of trust in the quality of the answer. And when you get those two things kind of going at once, people stop getting standardized garbage reporting and people start being a little bit more agile with data that they trust across departments. We've really seen, and again, I don't want to say culture, but definitely dialogue around data to keep the alliteration goes way, way up. And so if I was a director or a senior director, or I own measurement and I had a little bit of power, I'd try and stick it out and I'd do those two things. And actually that could maybe be my wrap up. So
there you go. Well, and there you have it. It may be as simple as data is important and so is culture. And don't use one to fight the other or damage the other.
There we go.
Tim, what about you? Any takeaways or wrap up thoughts?
I feel like we kind of bounced around a bit, but I think we headed into this knowing that we would bounce around a bit. I think culture is kind of an interesting topic. I'm kind of fascinated by it as, you know, one of the things that sometimes doesn't, like, culture and creativity, the things that I look for in an organization, the things I listen for when I'm working with them, there are ones that you get really excited about working with them because you say, wow, we're going to have fun. We're going to have fun with the data because you have a lot of questions. When somebody asks the question, and Jim had an example earlier of we're data-driven, come in and prove that I'm right, as opposed to we have a ton of questions and we think and we hope the data might help us answer some of those questions. That's kind of the fun part, because then we can start saying what are the questions? And if you're asking the questions because you're having independent and creative thoughts, you're looking at the site, you're looking at what people are saying about the site, and that's sparking ideas in your mind. And when you're saying, I have this idea, I don't have confidence that it's right, I wish there was a way to know that it was right, that's kind of setting up a virtuous cycle with the data. And that is not what happens, I think, in many, many companies. And to Jim's point, I think the larger and the older the company, the more likely it is they're struggling with that. And data is kind of a weapon of advancement and competition. The culture, which is not going to change rapidly, the degree of creativity that's baked into the organization and the receptiveness of that creativity to validating, having creativity, not I had an idea and it's right, but I had an idea, I'd like to know if it's right or not, is kind of the distinction between whether data's going to play nicely there or not.
I like it. So maybe we're coming down to, if you have a bad corporate culture, don't be data-driven.
What?
Because you'll just stifle creativity. Or, fix your culture, be data-driven.
If you have a bad corporate culture, then go to searchdiscovery.com/careers. And
there it is. It's nice that someone who's not Michael said that for once.
Right? So, like, that's the beauty of it. I don't even have to say it anymore. It's just an accepted fact in our community.
I mean, I hate to bring this back to a, we've covered the topic, you know, the whole careers thing, but we're in a sweet spot. Fight the good fight for a year, for a couple of years, and then step outside of it a little bit and figure out, or you're fighting a good fight that you're going to lose after 20 years. Chances are there are opportunities, and hopefully you're going forward to the next opportunity with your eyes a little more wide open and looking for something that's going to be a little bit more fun and rewarding. So I don't think it started out to be
or
a career.
Just surrender to that sweet, sweet paycheck. We should make stickers that say this is a data safe company and people can display it on their website.
Nice.
Like,
wait a minute. How are they going to display stickers on their website? They're going to have to go every time somebody comes to their website, they're going to have to go travel to them and put a sticker on their monitor.
All right. We've talked about a number of things, but now we want to hear from you. Have you seen data and corporate culture curtail creativity? If you could get a sticker on your website saying this is a safe place for data, would you? We'd love to hear from you. So comment on our Facebook page or on Twitter or on the Measure Slack. So for Tim Wilson and Jim Kane, I'm Michael Helbling. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget to join the conversation on Facebook or Twitter. We welcome your comments and questions. Facebook.com/Analytics Hour or at Analytics Hour on Twitter.
So smart guys wanted to fit in, so they made up a term called analytics. Analytics don't work.
Mixing up a batch of those pot brownies, am I right?
No. Fuck. Fine.
It's just a WAV file, man.
Binders full of women.
Why would you say that? We are the data. We are the children. We're the ones who are looking for a brighter day.
Well, maybe the greater good defined as, you know, corporate profitability.
No, I'm just laughing at my own Hot Fuzz reference.
That's a top 5 action film. Don't put that in the outtakes. I'll kill you to death.
Kill you to death.
Yeah, we can get a show out of that somehow. We'll need to cut that out.